Okay, our next presentation is entitled Identifying the Market Potential of Low-Input Turf Grasses for Residential Landscapes, presenting is Kari Hugi.
Thank you, Dr. Soldat. And again, my name is Kari Hugi, and today I'm going to talk about some marketing research on low-input turf grasses for home lawns. Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass are the most commonly found species in residential landscapes throughout the north central region, and they provide an excellent quality turf under ideal conditions, yet they are relatively resource intensive to maintain. Several studies have found that alternative species, specifically hard fescue, colonial bentgrass, sheep fescue, and tall fescue, perform well in the region with fewer resource inputs. These studies have also found that several native species, blue grama, prairie june grass, and tufted hair grass, show potential for use as low-input turf grasses, provided further germplasm improvement. In addition to these alternative grasses requiring fewer resource inputs such as water and fertilizer, they might also be more disease and pest resistant. So at the University of Minnesota, we're evaluating the use of several of these species, hard fescue, colonial bentgrass, prairie june grass, and tufted hair grass, as a novel approach to integrated pest management. Despite these findings, the majority of the seed available to an average homeowner is either Kentucky bluegrass or perennial ryegrass. So the objective of this research was to characterize the market potential of low-input turf grasses in an effort to bridge this gap. And to do so, we asked several questions. Will consumers pay a price premium for low-input turf grasses? And if so, how much? Are all low-input attributes of equal importance to consumers? And if not, which are the most important? What kind of things would motivate consumers to purchase low-input turf grasses? And alternatively, are there any barriers that might prevent their consumer acceptance on the market? To answer these questions, we conducted a survey of approximately 130 homeowners in June of 2010. We recruited participants through advertisements in local newspapers in and around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, as well as through Craigslist, and we paid each participant $30 to complete the survey. The survey consisted of two parts, a choice experiment and a short questionnaire. Choice experiments are commonly used in applied economics to investigate consumer preference and willingness to pay for various attributes of novel products not yet available on the market. In this choice experiment, participants came out to an actual field trial where they were presented with 16 choice scenarios. And in each choice scenario, there were two turf grass plots that varied in several characteristics, including price. And they were asked which of the two turf grass plots they would rather purchase, or indicate whether they would purchase neither. So here's an example of what one choice scenario would look like. The experiment was designed so that each of the two turf grass plots in a scenario varied by several aesthetic characteristics. As you can see, the plot on the left is darker and it has finer leaf texture. They also varied in certain information displayed on the signs you see in front of the plots, including price and maintenance requirements. There are two signs in front of each plot because we asked participants to perform two consecutive rounds of these choice experiments. In the first round, there was only one sign in front of a plot, which displayed information including the price to seed 1,000 square feet, as well as whether or not the grass was tolerant to shade. So in round one, participants based their choices on the aesthetics of the turf grass plots, as well as the price and shade tolerance. Here are the different levels of the attributes or factors in round one. So each plot was labeled as costing $5, $10, $15, or $20 to seed 1,000 square feet. We did have an area equivalent to 1,000 square feet roped off near the experiment so participants could use it as a reference. They were also labeled as whether or not they could grow in sun or sun and shade. And each plot varied by color, texture, and whether or not there was weed encroachment. And please note that the aesthetic characteristics were not labeled on signs. So after round one was complete, we added an additional sign with information about irrigation, fertilizer, and mowing requirements, as well as whether or not the grass was native to the United States. So in round two, participants made their choice not only based on the aesthetic characteristics, price, and shade tolerance, but also on the additional maintenance requirements and origin of the grass. So here are the different levels of the attributes or factors added in round two. So each plot was labeled as having an irrigation requirement of less than once a week, 1 to 2 times a week, or 3 to 5 times a week. A fertilizer requirement of 1, 2, or 3 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet per year, and a mowing requirement of once a month, every other week, or 1 to 2 times per week. And they were also labeled as being native to the United States or non-native. From these data, we were able to estimate price premiums for the various levels of the attributes included. And premiums do represent the extra cost per 1,000 square feet. So for example, participants were willing to pay $9.70 more per 1,000 square feet for grass with a low irrigation requirement versus one with a high irrigation requirement. They were willing to pay $7.49 more for grasses without weeds versus those with weeds. And compared again to the high irrigation requirement, they were willing to pay $5.85 more for plots with a moderate irrigation requirement. And then compared to the most frequent mowing of once or twice a week, participants were willing to pay $3.92 more for grasses with the most infrequent mowing requirement of once a month. And additionally, participants were willing to pay $2.66 more for grasses that were darker versus those that were light. At the 1% level, origin, fertility requirement, and shade tolerance were not significant drivers of willingness to pay. And compared to the high mowing requirement, participants were not willing to pay more for the moderate mowing requirement. So after participants had finished this choice experiment, they were also asked to fill out a short questionnaire about maintenance practices, sociodemographic information, as well as questions investigating attitudes about low-input turf grasses. These questions were aimed at identifying possible motivations and barriers to consumer acceptance of low-input turf grasses. And from participants' answers to these questions about attitudes, we were able to identify three market segments using a cluster analysis. The first segment, the evidence-seeking consumers, comprised 46% of our sample, and they indicated they'd be willing to purchase low-input turf grasses if provided more information or evidence such as samples or demonstrations in stores. The second group, the environmentally conscious consumers, comprised 41% of our sample, and these participants indicated they would be willing to purchase low-input turf grasses mainly because of environmental and health concerns. And the last group, the incentive-seeking consumers, comprised 13% of our sample, and indicated they would be motivated to purchase low-input turf grasses mainly through long-term saving estimates and monetary incentives. So overall, these results suggest there's a significant consumer demand for low-input turf grasses. The results also provide useful direction for future cultivar development, such as improved drought tolerance, competition against weeds, and slower vertical growth. The results also have implications for marketing and sales professionals, increasing consumer awareness through advertising, making information about low-input turf grasses more readily available to consumers, as well as providing samples or demonstrations in stores, if possible, would all be effective marketing strategies. There are some limitations of the methods and analysis used in this study that are worth noting. Our sample was recruited from in and around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, so our results might not be representative of other areas or regions of the country. And our sample was relatively small compared to other hypothetical surveys. But the results do provide important direction for the future improvement of low-input turf grasses, as well as their introduction to the lawn care market. With that, I would like to thank the USDA National Institute of Food and Agriculture Management Alternatives Program for funding this research, as well as my advisory committee and the University of Minnesota Turf Group for all their help. With that, I'll take any questions you might have. Yes, ma'am. Yes. The question was if participants knew they were entering in a study about lawn care. And yes, it was advertised as kind of vaguely a residential lawn care survey. So they did know that. They didn't know anything about it being low input or the specifics of the study. Yes. The answer was texture important, and it was not significant driver of willingness to pay, no, compared to the others. Again, in the back.
How many people did you survey, and did they all evaluate these plots at the same time?
The question was how many people did we survey, and if they all came out at the same time. We surveyed approximately 130. And we split it up into five groups throughout one day. And there were approximately 25 to 30 people in each group. And they were just allowed to walk through the trial at their leisure. So,
In the front. The
question was, how did we determine the market segments? And we conducted a focus group prior to this. And I looked at trying to identify possible motivations and barriers, and we designed 15 specific questions. And so from the variation in their responses to those questions, we used a cluster analysis to cluster those participants into groups, which we labeled as the marketing segments. The question is, would the market segments be similar in, I guess, other regions? And I don't think at this point we can infer that the market segments would be similar in other areas outside the metropolitan area of St. Paul and Minneapolis. In the back. Yes.
So was that bringing in any type of bias versus bringing in two grasses that look similar, a conventional and a low input, to see if that was the driver?
The question was how the, I guess, aesthetic appearance of the grasses affected. The experiment was designed so that the two grasses were, adjacent or semi-adjacent to each other, so participants wouldn't have to walk far in between. And it was designed so that the plots looked as similar as possible besides those three characteristics, just to eliminate other error that might be there.
Any evaluation on what type of lawn they might currently have had?
Yes. The question was any evaluation of what they currently had on their lawn. And we did ask a question in the questionnaire about what grass you currently have on your lawn, and the majority of participants did not know or had Kentucky bluegrass. Some indicated that they had some kind of fine fescue. So. Any other? All right.
One more? Time for one more?
Oh. Yes, ma'am. We did take sociodemographic information. They were half and half, male and female. And if I can remember correctly, about almost half of them were 45 or older. The question was if most of them had a lawn care provider, and we did ask that question, and it was a very small percentage, maybe under 10, that hired in outside lawn care services. Thank you.
Thank you, Kari.